Stay in touch with us on Facebook and Instagram at Unique Yet Connected.
You are now listening to episode 36 of Unique Yet Connected podcast. The theme for this episode is, isn't it time to stop taking ownership for other people's problems? Hello, brilliant souls in and around the world. Nolita Kozwa Fenton is my name. Dolokas is my clan name. And this is episode 36. A warm welcome to Unique Yet Connected podcast, where we treat our episodes as mini workshops so we can best share the wisdom of systemic family constellations. Thank you for always being here, joining our movement of translating this wisdom into a practical language that all of us can easily understand and, most importantly, implement in our daily lives. The theme for this episode is, isn't it time to stop taking ownership for other people's problems? Remember, when you comment, ask questions, like and share our content and links, you help us grow together, and there wouldn't be a podcast without you listening to us and sharing with us and commenting with us. Myself, Kinga, Nick, the ones who came before us, Bert Hellinger, the founder of the work that is most fulfilling for Kinga and I. And as always, Kinga is right here on the other side of the virtual. Hi, Kings.
Hi, Noli. Thank you. Hello, dear listeners and co-editors. Yes, dear listeners, keep sharing the knowledge because it can change lives for the better. Thank you for your huge contribution. You are our inspiration in building and opening up the theme about the laws of love and romantic relationships. Please continue to share your questions, comments, and insight on uniqueyetconnected@gmail.com. And on WhatsApp 076-289-6670. Join our monthly virtual connection circle every last Tuesday evening of the month. To receive your link, subscribe on our website www.uniqueyetconnected.com or check for updates on our socials at uniqueyetconnected.com.
Or simply drop us a WhatsApp message so we can share the link with you. Our WhatsApp number again is 076-286-0070. Today, Kinga is taking us into the science of codependent behavior. Let's hear.
We have established already that people can exhibit codependency in different ways and at varying levels. In this episode, we carry on reading through and discussing the list of the signs of codependent behavior by Erica Twinley. You might recognize a little bit of yourself in all criteria on the list, but it doesn't mean that you tick the box of a codependent person. A certain amount of discernment is called for while you are working with this list. A question to be asked, how much of this point is actually talking about me? How much does it feel like a true statement about me? In the past episode, we started to assess the points about the criteria of whether this feels very much like me, or a little bit like me, or not like me at all. You can scale them between 1 and 10, 1 being not at all like me and 10 exactly like me. Pause the podcast and bring your notebook to start to work if you haven't already done so. This can give you a bird's eye view of what is really going on with you and codependency. What is your relationship with it? You will be able to see if you are extremely codependent in many areas or if you are codependent just in some areas of your life, but not in others. Let's read through again the list and some signs of codependent behavior.
Before we do that, I just want to comment. Again, Kings, I like the idea of the list and that we can, you know, measure ourselves on. And my book is right here and my pen and paper. And I've started assessing myself from the last episode. So please go ahead and read the list. We're listening.
Lacking boundaries between yourself and others. Blurring lines in relationships. You struggle to see where you end and the other person begins. Feeling low self-esteem, fearing rejection and abandonment. This is how far we got in the previous episode. And now the rest of the list. apologizing or accepting blame to avoid conflict, being who someone else wants you to be, ignoring your own needs, putting other people's needs before your own, anticipating and reacting to someone else's needs, which may be perceived accurately or not, feeling like you have lost your sense of self, needing to control, including making decisions for others or managing them, doing things for people that make you feel uncomfortable just to make them happy, taking on too much, basing your mood on how someone else feels, not your emotion, resenting not receiving appreciation for your action.
I must say, though, Kings, as excited as I am that we are doing this, it's also a very painful process for me. I think since we've started in the last two episodes, there's things that have been coming up. So I just want to say to the listeners, we understand, you know, it's not easy, but being kind, you know, helps, you know, and yeah, hopefully you remember that we are always here for you. Kinga always says, if something does come up or something that does trigger you, send us a text, you know, drop us a DM. We will, you know, get back to you. And moving into the episode, let's open up apologizing or accepting blame to avoid conflict.
As usual, by asking some questions. Do you apologize to your partner when you have done nothing wrong? Do you check in with the other person and ask for permission even about daily tasks? Do you apologize when someone loses his temper with you in an attempt to calm down the situation? Are you always trying to keep everything peaceful?
This one feels like a frightening space to be in. Apologizing just to keep the peace or to calm a situation. What can be the possible examples of the root causes that can make a person apologize or accept blame just to avoid conflict?
It links back to feeling responsible for someone else's feelings. This phenomenon we spoke about in detail in episode 34. In short, one of the biggest factors is that when we were little, it was not safe enough to explore and reflect on our feelings because someone else's mood was directly affecting our well-being. But let's take a look what happened to you when you heard the question. Do any of them trigger something in you? Should I read them again?
It's okay, Kings. No need. I can respond. You know, the one that asks, do you apologize when someone loses his temper with you in an attempt to calm down the situation? It didn't exactly trigger me, but it reminded me that I've been in the situation as the person, you know, as a person. And also I've seen other people around me doing the apologizing as a child, especially. Seeing all these older person apologizing to calm a situation or to calm down someone. So yeah. And the other one, are you always trying to keep everything peaceful? So that is a trigger. I recognize both of them in myself, and I feel it's mostly common in an abusive relationship to apologize, to calm down the situation, and also trying to keep the peace by all means, even to a point where I've sacrificed myself and my own peace. I remember in my ex-marriage, I did it thinking it would make it better. Covering up the situation and not wanting the people outside the room or outside the house, you know, to hear the abuse or to even smell it. You know, and little did I know that it was out there. People could hear, you know, no matter how much I tried to calm the situation. So, yeah.
Before your ex-marriage, were you okay to go into conflict?
I actually think I inherited avoiding conflict. Because there's a situation like you mentioned in the previous episode, the whole pregnancy situation and, you know, and our childhood stuff, you know, does come up in the stage. So when my parents got married and during the pregnancy, they stayed with my late grandmother, my dad's mom, and her and my mom clashed. And my mom was the kind of person, you know, the kind of woman who was taught, you know, never to respond, you know, to elders, you know, always keep the peace, be a lady. And so she did. So I think she was always trying to calm the clash, you know, by being kind and being, you know, peaceful, you know, and doing all these good things to my grandmother. And my dad was like the same. He never engaged in any, like, you know, stuff with his mother, and you know, he would never engage. And then there was an incident when I was 5 years old. My mom had a half brother that would always fight and lose his temper, you know, with someone or something. Whenever there was a family gathering or he was visiting, there would be this stress to calm this person down, you know, to calm the situation. Even if he's the one that, you know, is triggering everyone, you know. And so, yeah, I saw a lot of that and I didn't like it. Then there was the home situation with my dad's drinking, and that would bring out the worst in him. I've shared some of the things in the podcast, and I also think I've blocked, you know, some of the incidents that happened at home and with my dad's mother as well. But all of them combined made me hate conflict.
That is understandable. Because when somebody has an explosive temper, the other party tries to balance the situation and avoid putting extra wood on the fire by opposing their views. The situation is already too dangerous. This is especially true when we are little and we don't have the ability to stand up for ourselves. This is almost like if the two parties were sitting in a boat, if you can imagine that, and one person is on a mission to try to save the boat from capsizing because of the other person's action. When the abuser loses his temper and rocks the boat, our safe home, it will lean dangerously to one side. The abused person will try to balance the boat back to equilibrium by leaning far out on the other side of the boat, with taking all the blame and apologizing for the abuser's action. When this situation repeatedly happens with us, the part that looks for peace and angry part in us become two opposing parts. We end up looking at the angry parts of us or the fighting parts in us as bad because we experience anger as bad, fighting as bad. We try to avoid anger at all costs. The part that we use to balance and specify a situation when we feel attacked by being overly accommodating, apologizing, and taking the blame becomes the more prominent part of us. We forget how to stand up for ourselves. When after healing, we finally allow the fighting part to stand up for us, its action could materialize in standing our ground or fighting for ourselves when necessary, but also in removing ourselves from dangerous situations. Another thing, which is a big thing, that the person who is always apologizing and accepting the blame is taking full responsibility for the situation, even if he didn't start the fight. With this action, he is trying to calm the situation down, but in the process, he's also taking on something that doesn't belong to him. In a healthy relationship, it should be okay to say, my opinion differs from yours.
And then I think in high school, till about just before I separated with my ex-husband, I wasn't confrontational at all. You know, I only started being confrontational later in life when I realized just how much it didn't serve me and didn't work for my relationships.
When your boundaries between you and your partner were weak at the beginning of the relationship and suddenly you started to define your boundaries, it would have felt to your partner that you are unnecessarily opposing him. He is used to you saying yes to everything, and now you suddenly started to say no to things. And yes, while we are still learning about where our right boundaries are that protect and define us and at the same time don't hurt others, we will go overboard with saying no unnecessarily when we could have said yes. When our boundaries used to be too loose and when we were faced with someone who was hard and aggressive, we let them come in and cause havoc in our personal space. We learned that aggression works, and at the beginning of finding our healthy boundaries, we might become the aggressors ourselves.
Yeah, that is so true. Like, yeah, that's been an extreme moment, you know, there with me in trying to learn the healthy boundaries. And next one on the list that I'd like us to open up is being who someone else wants you to be.
We talked about when we want our partner to be someone else in the previous episode. This is kind of the other side of the same coin. Do you have to give up a part of you or create and keep up a persona to be able to hold on to your relationship? Do you constantly control your emotions to be what your partner likes to be with?
Not currently, but there was a temptation when I met my husband now, because he doesn't drink and I drink. It was very new to be someone who didn't drink, and because of that I didn't know how to deal with it, and all of the societal judgments of women who drink instead of the man came rushing as well. Also, some of the misconceptions, you know, about men who don't drink. So I ended up putting a strain on the relationship, and it upset him because he had no issues. So for a while, it became a struggle up until I believed he really didn't have issues, you know, or problems with me having a drink. And I also realized that in that process, like, I was never a big drinker. I drank because I wanted to rebel against my dad's alcoholism. One, because I wanted to define that I was not my dad, I was me. And also because it traumatized my mom so much that anything alcohol, you know, she just didn't want to hear of it. And then I just wanted to create a healthy relationship with alcohol, not from my mom's position or anybody else's position. And so I didn't want to be associated with my dad's sickness, you know, and because I understood that it was a sickness. And also that my mother's disapproval and triggers about it is just like, no, this is not for me, it's for you. So when I met Sisa, I was like, oh, so what am I going to do about this? You know, so here's this person. Is he going to be okay for the relationship? Is he keeping up what you just said, like the persona? Is he trying to hold on to the relationship, what we've discussed in the previous episode? Or is he being for real? And also I question myself, how will it look like to his family when I am, you know, having a drink, when they find alcohol in his house, when there are parties and I'm having a glass of wine and they are not? Especially because we knew at that time that we would eventually marry. So we knew it when we started dating. So with all the traditional and cultural judgments and barriers, if your husband doesn't drink, how dare you drink? You know, so they all came rushing in, and, you know, and all these things about you are horrible wife or makoti if you do drink, if you do that drink. So I had to sit with it, and that asking myself, so do I give up my glass of wine for the relationship? And I just couldn't. And also because he didn't require that of me, that was fine.
How did it feel to be with someone who's okay with you having a drink?
It did feel awkward at first, you know, pouring a glass of wine just for me. It was like, okay. And with, like I've mentioned, with all the cultural barriers of a man, and also his, you know, he's we almost a generational apart. So it was like, okay, I didn't trust. So I had trust issues about that, that he's really, really okay, especially coming from, you know, the generation that he was coming from. So it was a very strange thing to have someone allowing me to be myself. That I, it almost felt like a trap. Is it trapping me? Is it trying to find something? And him mastering, letting me be with myself, with me having a drink, has also given me a permission to accept that it's okay to not enjoy the same things in a relationship, because before I met him, I thought it was impossible for a relationship to work if you didn't enjoy your experience, everything together.
I find it interesting that this time you chose a husband who is not defined by whether he drinks or not. And drinking is not an important part of his identity. For you, it might be important because of your dad or some other reason, maybe cultural pressure, but for him, it's not important. He doesn't define himself by it. More than probably, and unbeknown to you, the part in you that was hurt by your dad's alcoholism was quite healed by the time you met Sisa, and your husband's behavior didn't have to represent your relationship to alcohol. So, and obviously, him allowing you to be who you are, it also means that you healed a lot on this codependency journey to recover from codependency. And I was just laughing, thinking about when my partner and I moved to South Africa. We were only the two of us here, and we became extremely codependent of each other. Being an immigrant, the feeling of safety was gone. There were no friends, no family, nothing. We got to a point that we would discuss how we would dress up. We wanted to show our unity to the world by looking as one. And sometimes even now, when we go to a place where we are not familiar with the people, we would pick out our dresses to match. The other weekend, we were invited to an event and I picked a green dress. And Alex told me, you mustn't wear the green one because I don't have anything to match your dress. So what can I say? We are recovering codependence. And we started this session with the situation when someone else wants you to be like what they want you to be. This can come in many forms and shapes. Having matching tattoos with your friends who attest to your friendship and you don't want to have a tattoo. Changing your looks, behavior to please your partner. Having plastic surgery to keep your relationship.
Yeah, thank you for that. At least, you know, the work is showing. Thanks, Kings. You know, and it's quite interesting. I mostly battle with a few friendships when I was under 21, where I should have said no, and I couldn't. And I ended up in sticky situations. And I think that I'm codependent or was transferred into the relationship with my ex, and because I met him when I was 21. And that relationship lasted till my mid-30s, 40 years of my life.
Actually, when we are 21, we are still in the adolescent stage of our identity development. What is this stage about? This is the stage when we are busy finalizing and sealing our identity. Who are we? Who we are as an adult? The adolescent stage only ends when we are 26 or 27 years old. It starts with our puberty, which means that at 21, you were right in the middle of it, nowhere near to finish this stage. The biggest thing we are working with at this stage is loyalty. Who am I and what am I loyal to? It is actually quite normal or even necessary to end up in sticky situation. We are testing what is okay with me, who I want to be when I become an adult. What actions should I take and what should I never do again? So we often meet our partners at a very young age while we are both busy with the process of finding out who we are. Just to share a little bit of my story, it also follows a very common pattern of ending up straight away from leaving my parents' house in a long-term relationship. It took me a long time to realize that I don't know who I am outside of the relationship. I had absolutely no clue. My parents used to form my life until the age of 18, and then him being a bit older than me formed my life. Not knowing who I am and who I wanted to be was one of the reasons we had to get divorced. When I was 29, I couldn't recognize the person I became. I didn't even like the person I became. I decided that I wanted to be someone else. Inside of me, I knew that this was not me. I don't know this person who is looking back at me from the mirror, and it's time to start my journey to finding myself free of generational patterns, limiting beliefs, and fake roles.
Yeah, Nate Kings, that's very powerful, and I relate to that. So that's why my past marriage was such a big part of my identity. I didn't know who I was. I lost myself in that relationship. Maybe that could be the reason why I might be a little extreme in my current marriage about my identity. Now that I found it, I'm holding on to it, you know, and I vowed never to be defined by a relationship again. I just want to own myself. So, and not changing my surname to his is a part of that, you know, ownership of self. And some people are questioning me a lot about that, you know, changing my surname. And on that note, the next one on the list is ignoring your own needs and putting other people's needs before your own. So let's open that one up.
These two go hand in hand with each other. Are you a natural caretaker? If yes, be aware that you might have to look for the other kind of codependency in you. Do you take as good care of yourself as you take of others? Would you rather buy the most fashionable shoes for your daughter than go and pay for a massage for yourself? Do you feel guilty when you take care of yourself? Do you take care of yourself so you can be there for others?
Some deep questions there. Yeah, Kings, this last one hits, you know. Do you take care of yourself so you can be there for others? There's a huge maybe there. It's a question I should ponder more on. I feel this one is a tricky one, you know, especially being a woman and conditioned that the responsibility of taking care of others falls on us, and that putting everybody else before us is the highest form of devotion and love. So it's got a lot. So I'm intrigued by the natural caretaker question. And I find myself asking, am I one, or have I been conditioned or taught, or circumstances required me to be one? I sort of assume the role, you know? So I don't know if I'm a natural caretaker. You know, it's something that I'll have to explore with myself, you know, but I find myself in one. But what I mean that I'm not sure if I'm one, I'm in my own true identity. You know, do you take as good care of yourself as you take care of others? I would like to believe that I do, but, you know, there's still a part there that I still have the tendency to be extra with others. you know, to go the extra mile for others. Maybe still the pleasing in me playing out. The other question is, would you rather buy the most fashionable shoes for your daughter than go and pay for a massage for yourself? Yeah, as you know, I don't have children of my own, but I feel I do and have done this way a number of times. My nieces, my husband's children, you know, where I would just buy them the best shoes or the best of something and not do my hair, you know, or go get a massage for myself. So I've done this, and yeah. And then the other one is, do you feel guilty when you take care of yourself? This one I had to consciously be selfish. Because I knew that, you know, it's coming from somewhere. So, and yes, guilt does try to creep in sometimes. And, you know, when I'm out there and I'm like, oh, I would like to sit down and treat myself to coffee, to a glass of something, or to a pair of shoes, or jewelry, or whatever. And then the guilt will creep in and say, what about, you know, the people in the house? What about whoever needs this? So I constantly find myself having to shut that down somehow. Yeah.
Yep. Needs and wants are not the same thing. So just a question. What do you do when, let's say, you have guests visiting, but you had a long day and you are very tired? Is it okay for you to say to them that I have to go to sleep now? You are more than welcome to stay and have a party, but I am too tired. Do you listen to your body's needs more or follow social expectations? And yes, obviously, I agree. This is a fine line and we have to tread carefully and can't just say me, me, me all the time. Healthy boundaries, taking consideration all the parties involved, or we could say the people on both sides of it. But to learn to look after yourself is part of loving yourself. Giving yourself little gifts from time to time talks lovingly to the little one in you. Giving gifts is one of the 5 love languages. Maybe the shoes were not the right example, but to give yourself what you need is a gift to yourself. Be that sleep, food, or a hug. And it's okay. And you have every right to ask for it for yourself. I used to feel that I had to be on call 24/7 when someone came to visit us and be available for their every request. And it took me quite a while to learn that I have to check in with my guests what they would like to do and how I'm able to accommodate their requests without uprooting my whole life.
I just gave myself a hug. Because I think I need one today. So yes, I'm also very familiar with that one, the guest example. So thank you for that example, Kings. I do that a lot with visitors. And Sisa would be like, is it really necessary? It's not necessary that you do this. You don't have to, you know, he's always feel like he's talking me out of it, but now I understand. So, because I would rather squeeze in my responsibility somewhere and prioritize my guests. And there's still something to be worked out there, say finding the balance. So thank you for that advice in the end as well.
Yeah, finding a balance is not always easy. You are not going to ignore your guests, but also whatever you need to do, you do in this balanced situation for your mental well-being. You need to go for a walk on your own. You do that.
You know, with the guest one, you know what's coming up for me is at the cultural expectations, especially from the wives, because, I mean, it can be quite challenging to balance the expectations, you know, and the our own conditioning and messaging that says, when your husband's people are visiting, the wife should be on call 24/7, because if she isn't, she didn't meet her duties, you know. So on the flip side, you might feel guilty even for taking your time, especially if you just sit around and people see you just lazing around, but you're actually taking time to rest, you know. And then at the end of the day, when you go to bed, you feel exhausted and you don't even want your husband to touch you, because also you like, you were not running around as, you know, as I was the whole day.
Yeah, taking on all the responsibilities creates a lot of resentment in us and makes us detached from our partners. Since COVID, to have guests around is something that became quite challenging for a lot of people. COVID stopped us from seeing people, and the codependent suddenly realized that, I don't have to run around when no one is coming to visit. For maybe the first time in my life, I can rest and there is no one I feel I'm obligated to serve. It is much more comfortable life not to have guests around. And from being overly accommodating, we turned around and became antisocial. So yes, this is a fine balance, but it should be okay if you are too tired to go to bed, even though your guests are still there. It should be okay to bring in takeaways when you cater for your visitors. In my parents' days, ordering a meal in was not available as an option. I was nowhere to order from. So the upbringing said that it is shameful not to cook when you are expecting guests. What is more important? To open your heart to your visitors and spend time with them, or to show off your cooking talents?
And that is the question, dear listener. This was another amazing episode, and it reveals a lot that I had forgotten about. Residues and some of the active codependent traits, as well as made me appreciate some of the traits I've healed or still healing from. So I'm grateful for this episode, dear listener. We also hope this episode will be helpful to you and in your revelation and also healing journey. Please do share this episode so it can help the next person. Kings, what can we expect in episode 37 as a reminder? I know we're still here.
Yeah, there are still a lot of gems we can unearth by working through the list of the signs of codependent behaviors. And if you feel like you are experiencing limiting patterns or relationship issues and would like to have an individual session, book a family constellation session with us on our website, www.uniqueyetconnected.com, or on socials, Facebook or Instagram. Our handle on both platforms is @uniqueyetconnected.
And thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to episode 36. And another big thank you to Nick Mons from That Guy Productions for making us sound fabulous and on point. Our episode 37 is in 2 weeks' time from now. Tune in on the 10th of December, 2023 at 10 a.m. South African Standard Time. And remember, all our episodes are evergreen and you can find them online. On YouTube, you can find them on Spotify, you can also find them on Apple Podcast. Yes, and we're looking forward to hearing from you. Like our pages, engage with us on Facebook and Instagram, and our handle is @uniqueyetconnected, unique spelled YOUNIQUE. Stay unique, stay connected, and remember, you are one of a kind, and we can only create a really meaningful podcast together. And siyabulela xa khosono till the next episode.
Thank you. Bye bye.